It is May the 19th, and we are in Yirmiyahu. We were finishing Perek Chafav, chapter 26. Last time, we're going to finish up that tonight, and then move on to Perek Lamed Hei, chapter 35, where the storyline continues. Tonight's shir has a special dedication for Noah ben Yaakov, who passed away on the second day of Shavuos. We ended off last time talking about the story at the end of Maseches Makos with Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues. And we talked, the reason why we brought that up is because the Navi in Yirmiyahu in Perek Chafav in chapter 26 talks about how the Navi Uriyahu was killed because he said Nevuah, because he prophesied. He said the Nevuah that the same Nevuah that Micha had said many years earlier, which is Tzion Sada Secharesh, that Tzion will be plowed over like a field. So when Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues were coming to visit the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and they saw a fox come out from the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, from where the Holy of Holies had stood, so his colleagues started to cry, and he laughed. They said to him, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Why are you crying?" And they said, "Because how could we not cry if this is the place where the Pasuk says, Hazara karev yumas, that anybody who's not a Kohen gets close to this place will die, and now a fox comes out of there, how can we not cry?" So he says, "This is why I'm laughing." And he quotes the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Pasuk Perek Ches, chapter 8, where the Navi Yeshaya puts together two prophets actually, that have not yet been born in his day. One is Uriah, the one we just read about in Yirmiyahu, and the other is Zechariah, who is going to come on the scene with the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And Yeshaya calls them Edim Ne'amanim, my two trustworthy or reliable witnesses. So Rabbi Akiva said, how do you have those two in the same sentence? One lives at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. That's over here in Yirmiyahu. The other one lives in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, 70 years later. And that's Zechariah. So how can they be put together? So Rabbi Akiva said, because the Yeshaya is telling us that the prophecy of Zechariah, which is a beautiful prophecy about how in the future the third Beis HaMikdash will be built, and Od Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenos Berchovos Yerushalayim, that in the future the elderly men and women will sit in tranquility and in peace in the streets of Yerushalayim and not worry, not have any fear. And that's referring, of course, to the future. And that can only come true after the Nevuah, after the prophecy of Uriah comes true, that Tzion will be plowed over like a field. Now that I've seen that the prophecy of Uriah has come true, now I am confident that the prophecy of Zechariah will also come true. And with that, his colleague said to him, "Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva, you have consoled us, Akiva, you have consoled us." So we read this story in detail last time, and what we still need to do is discuss exactly what it is that Rabbi Akiva saw, that he, because of this, he laughed, and he consoled his colleagues. His friends they had not thought about this idea before until he presented it to them, and then they were consoled. And they said, "Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu, you've consoled us." So what exactly did he see? Aside from the obvious point that he makes, that the two prophecies are toloi zebozeh, are dependent one on the other, but what is the deeper meaning behind that? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. We learned in the end of Perek Chafav, chapter 26 in Yirmiyahu, that Yirmiyahu was nearly killed for his prophecy, because he says a scathing prophecy against Yerushalayim and against the people, that because of their behavior there's going to be destruction. And there was a whole group of people, perhaps a mob, and they were fighting back and forth. Should they kill Yirmiyahu for what he said? Should they not? And they argued back and forth. And those who wanted to save him, they argued that we have a prophecy, that of Micha, which was said in the days of the Tzaddik, the King Chizkiyahu. And Micha said that a terrible prophecy that Tzion will be plowed over like a field. And Chizkiyahu didn't kill him, rather the people did teshuva, and they were saved. So they argued, we don't want to kill Yirmiyahu, that would be a terrible thing to do. What we want to do is listen to his words, take them to heart, and do teshuva, just like they did in the days of Micha, in the days of Chizkiyahu the king. Those who wanted to kill Yirmiyahu said back, well, there's another person, Uriyahu, who said the same type of prophecy. He also said that Tzion will be plowed over like a field, and the king Yehoyakim, the evil king Yehoyakim, wanted to kill him. He ran away to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, and then Yehoyakim sent men after him, dragged him back to Israel, and did execute him, killed him, murdered him. So Yirmiyahu should be murdered as well, should be killed as well. And the Navi ends off that Yirmiyahu was spared, that Achikam ben Shaphan was a prominent person, and he managed to get Yirmiyahu saved and not to allow him to be killed by the mob. So this prophecy is the one that the Navi Yeshaya many years earlier links to the prophecy of Zechariah and says that there are two Edim Ne'emanim, two reliable witnesses, Uriah and Zechariah. Now Zechariah is the positive prophecy that in the future the older men and women will sit in peace and safety in the streets of Yerushalayim. Why is it that these two prophecies need to be linked together? What is the deeper meaning in that? Why must they be linked together? We have two prophecies. Even without linking them together, we know they both have to come true. If they're prophecies, they come true. That's what we believe in all of the Nevi'im, all the prophets. So what is this point of linking the two together? Meaning, it would be difficult to say that one can only come true if the other one comes true. Because that would suggest that neither one has to come true, that the prophecy might not come true, and that one would be, that either they both come true or they both don't come true. Why either one of them in doubt whether they're going to come true or not? The negative prophecy, the one that Tzion will be plowed over like a field, so in the days of Micha, he said the same prophecy, and in the end it did not come true, meaning that that's what the people were saying. Micha said this terrible prophecy, it didn't come true. Why? Because Chizkiyahu, the king, did not kill Micha, instead they did Teshuvah, and they were spared. So they were arguing that if a Navi says something that's negative and scary, that's not a reason to kill the Navi. Don't kill the messenger. That's not going to save us anyway. What's really going to save us is doing teshuva. So they said, we have an example where the prophecy did not come true and we were spared. So it doesn't have to come true here either. We can do teshuva. So the people said back, the ones who wanted to kill Yirmiyahu said back, but we have another example. We have Uriyahu ben Shemayahu, who said the same thing as Micha. He said that Tzion will be plowed over like a field, and Yehoyakim killed him, so we should kill Yirmiyahu. Now what is their point that Yehoyakim killed Uriyahu? Does that make it the right thing to do? Just because Yehoyakim killed him? Even if they liked Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was a rasha. So even if it was his supporters who are talking. But does that prove that it's correct and good to do just because Yehoyakim killed the Navi Uriyahu? Does that make it correct? Does that make it the right thing to kill Yirmiyahu? And so what are we going to say? We say, well, this prophet said a bad thing and he wasn't killed. Yeah, but this one said a bad thing and he was killed. So why does one thing prove the other? What is the point of bringing up that Yehoyakim killed Uriyahu? So it seems to me that the point that is being made over here is that those who wanted to kill Yirmiyahu were saying, there's no point in leaving him alive and doing teshuvah. It's not going to help anyway. After all, Uriyahu was killed. It's true, we have an example of Micha, who said a scathing nevuah, and he caused teshuvah. Chizkiyahu the tzaddik did teshuvah with the people, and that nevuah did not come true at that time. But Uriyahu repeated the same nevuah now. He said the same nevuah. You see that when Micha said his nevuah all those years ago and the people did teshuvah, it didn't eradicate the possibility of that nevuah ever happening. It could happen again if the people would end up not staying the way they should and starting to do evil again, then that nevuah could come back, which it did. Micha said that Sion will be plowed over like a field, and they did teshuva. So you say, okay, it's gone, but it's not gone. Here it is again. Uriyahu says the same nevuah, and he says it as well. So it's not that the teshuva totally gets rid of the terrible nevuah. It may delay it. It may keep it from happening for some amount of time, but eventually it's going to come back to bite us anyway. So we don't want these Nevi'im saying these terrible prophecies because it means it's going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. Teshuvah is not going to help. Even Chizkiyahu, the great tzaddik who did all that teshuvah, what good did it do us? So it spared us for 100 years or so. But now it's coming back anyway. So Yehoyakim had Uriyahu killed. We want to kill Yirmiyahu as well because these Nevuahs are only hurting us. And we want to make an example out of Yirmiyahu that Nevi'im should not be allowed to say such terrible prophecies. In the end, Yirmiyahu was saved. But that was the argument they were saying, that we don't want these prophecies said because in the end they're going to come true. We can't really stop them from happening. Yeshaya says that we have Edim Ne'emanim. We have two reliable witnesses. We have Uriyahu, who gives this very negative prophecy, and we have Zechariah, who gives a very positive prophecy. Does the prophecy of Uriyahu, the negative one, does that need to come true? So it doesn't need to come true. Teshuvah can be done. Teshuvah can be done permanently, that there not be any need for the negative prophecy anymore. It can be. It's true that although when Micha said the same prophecy and the people did teshuvah, later on the prophecy comes back, but that's only because the people started acting in an evil way again. But it doesn't mean the prophecy has to come back. All the negative prophecies are said conditionally. If we don't do teshuvah, chas v'shalom, then the negative things are going to happen. But they don't have to happen. They could be stopped. But the people felt it's a foregone conclusion. Once these prophecies are said, they're going to happen. Maybe not right away, maybe it'll get delayed for a little while, but they're going to happen. And therefore they killed Uriyahu, and they wanted to kill Yirmiyahu. So Yeshaya says, there's another prophecy, that of Zechariah, which is going to come later. It's going to come in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now Zechariah, who makes that prophecy, says that prophecy, he's talking at a time that things are much better. The second Beis HaMikdash is being rebuilt. Still, he's not talking about the era of the second Beis HaMikdash. He's talking about the era of the third Beis HaMikdash. Even though he's saying a prophecy at a time when the people are good, and there's teshuvah, and we are being redeemed, yet they knew it was not going to last. The good was not going to last. The second Beis HaMikdash was not going to last forever. They all knew that. They knew that it would last for a certain amount of time, but then we would go into Galus again. And we would await the third Beis HaMikdash, which is what we're waiting for now. So Zechariah's prophecy is the mirror image of Uriah's prophecy. Uriah's prophecy mimics that of Micha. It was a negative prophecy that was stopped for 100 years, 120 years, however much time it was, but then it came back because the people didn't behave, and it came back. Zechariah's prophecy is the reverse. It's a positive prophecy at a time when the people deserved good, but in the end, it was also delayed. It was delayed with the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and Galus, which we are in right now. We're still in that period of time of the delay of Zechariah's prophecy coming true. But eventually, we know it will come true with the construction of the third Beis HaMikdash. Yeshaya was saying, and Rabbi Akiva was making the point, that if a negative prophecy that had been stopped because the people did teshuvah back in the days of Micha, back in the days of Chizkiyahu the king, if a negative prophecy was stopped, but then it came back because the people behaved badly and it came back, then the positive prophecy of Zechariah, which was also stopped, and we're still in that position of it being stopped. Rabbi Akiva was also in the position of being stopped. Rabbi Akiva lived in the same Galus that we're in. He just lived in the beginning of this Galus. We are hopefully at the end of this Galus. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, if with a negative prophecy that gets delayed or stopped, it can still come back in full force if the people misbehave, then a positive prophecy, that of Zechariah, has the same rules. If anything, it's more guaranteed that just because it's been delayed, just because it's been stopped, that's only a temporary stop. And it will come back. And that will be the beginning of the third Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva laughs. He's not laughing because he likes the destruction. Of course it's a terrible thing to see a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Holy of Holies. It's a terrible thing to see. But Rabbi Akiva was saying, this shows that a delayed prophecy, a prophecy that seemed like it was not going to happen, but it happened anyway later, if that's true in the negative, it is for sure true in the positive. And Yeshaya links the two together. Whatever you see happening with that negative prophecy, with Uriah's prophecy, the same is going to happen with Zechariah's prophecy. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva laughed. He said, look at the destruction only as proof that there will be eventually a redemption. And therefore, they said to Rabbi Akiva, Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu, you have consoled us. What does nechama, consolation, mean? Rashi says in Parshas Noach, we mentioned this before, that nechama means to look at something with a different perspective, to look at it from a different angle. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that now the tears are gone. Now there's nothing bad that's ever going to happen again. Now we can just celebrate because we're going to get redeemed. That's not what it means. They were in Galus, and they were in the beginning of a very long Galus that we are still in. And there's been a lot of pain and suffering that have happened since Rabbi Akiva's time until now. But he consoled them because there's another way to look at the pain and suffering. The pain and suffering are only a proof that the nevuah of Zechariah, the positive one, that is currently delayed, will come back. And it will come back in full force, the way it should, in the future with the construction of the third Beis HaMikdash. And that was the end of Perek Chavav 26. We are now going to jump ahead to Perek Lamed Hei 35. Have no fear, we do intend to cover all of the parts that we are skipping, but I want to maintain the storyline, and therefore we are now going to jump to Lamed Hei and Lamed Vav. Tonight we'll cover hopefully all of Lamed Hei, all of 35, because these two chapters, 35 and 36, are still going to deal with the reign of Yehoyakim, this period of time that we're in right now with Yirmiyahu and the evil king Yehoyakim. So moving to Perek Lamed Hei, chapter 35. The Pasuk tells us this is a fascinating episode that we're about to read about. Hadavar asher haya el Yirmiyahu me'es Hashem. The word that came to Yirmiyahu from Hashem, Bimei Yehoyakim ben Yehoshio melech Yehuda. In the days of Yehoyakim, the son of Yehoshio, the king of Yehuda, Lamar sang, Haloch el beis ha-rechavim. Go to the house of Rechavim. That's a family name. V'dibarto, some you shall speak to them. Vaviosam, vahaviosam beis Hashem. You should bring them to the beis HaMikdash, to the temple. Elachas halishachos, to one of the chambers in the beis HaMikdash, not into the actual sanctuary, but to one of the chambers. V'yishkisa osam yoyin, and you should give them wine to drink. That's all. Give them wine to drink. That was the instruction that Hashem gave Yirmiyahu. Take this family, bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, to one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Okay? So Yirmiyahu doesn't know what this is all about, but he listens. Vo'ekaches ya'azanya ven Yirmiyahu ben Chavatznia. And I took Ya'aznia ben Yirmiyahu ben Chavatznia. That's a person's name. It's not the same Yirmiyahu this person's father's name. Ve'esachav and his brothers, ve'eskol banav and all his sons, ve'eskol beis ha-rechavim and all of the people of the house of Rechavim. Vavio son beis Hashem brought them to the beis HaMikdash, Elishkas b'nei Chanan ben Yigdal Yahu ish ha-elokim, to the chamber of the children of Chanan ben Yigdal Yahu, who himself was a prophet. Chanan was a prophet. Asher Eitz Elishkas HaSarim, that was next to the chamber of the leaders. Asher Mimal Lelishkas Maaseh Yahu ben Shalom Shomer HaSaf. That was above the chamber of Maaseh Yahu ben Shalom, who was in charge of the treasury. So these people's names, we don't necessarily know much about each of these people, but Yirmiyahu is giving us an exact account of where this happened. V'etein lifnei bnei veis rechavim, and I put in front of the people of the house of rechavim, givim meleim yayin v'chosos, goblets full of wine and cups. V'amar aleim, and I said to them, shesu yayin, drink wine. I want you to notice that Yirmiyahu did not say to them, Hashem said, drink wine. He said to them, drink wine. This is critical. If Yirmiyahu would have said to them, Hashem said, drink wine, there couldn't be any more discussion. But that's not what happened. He said to them, drink wine. Vayomru, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayomru, they said, lo nishta yayin, we will not drink wine. Ki Yonadav ben Rechav Avinu, because Yonadav ben Rechav, our father, it doesn't mean their father, it means their ancestor. Tziva Aleinu Lemor, he commanded on us, saying, Lo Sishtu Yayin, do not drink wine. Atem Uvnechem Ad Olam, you and your children forever. Uvayis Lo Sivnu, and you shall not build any houses. Vizera Lo Sizrau, you shouldn't plant any crops, v'cherem lo sito, and do not plant any vineyards, v'lo yia lachem, and you shouldn't even have any, not just don't plant, but don't buy them either. Ki ba'ahalim teishvu, kol yameichem, you should live in tents all your lives, l'mantichyu yamim rabim, so that you'll live many days, al pnei adama, on the face of the earth, Asher atem garim sham, that you are sojourning there. In order that you should be able to live for a long period of time in the place that you are sojourning, garim, therefore you should not drink wine, nor should you live in houses, nor should you plant any vineyards or any crops. I want to emphasize the word garim, gar, means to sojourn. It does not mean to live. In modern Hebrew, lagur or gar means to live. That is an incorrect use of the word gar. That is a mistake in modern Hebrew. There's a lot of modern Hebrew that is mistaken. It is taking the biblical Hebrew and making a mistake in what it really means. Gar does not mean to live. It means to be someplace temporarily, to sojourn. In Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, the word for living someplace is to be shave, to dwell, yeshivu be'areihem, to dwell in their cities. The gar means to sojourn, to pass through, to come by temporarily. So, Yonadav ben Rechav told his descendants, in order that you should be able to stay for a long period of time in the land that you are sojourning, you should avoid wine, houses, crops, and vineyards. If he is saying that they are garim, that means we are not talking about Jews who were born Jewish. Because if they were born Jewish, then they would have land. They wouldn't be garim, they wouldn't be sojourning. They would be, from the language of shave, shavim, they would be living there. If he uses the term garim, that tells us we're talking about people who are converts. We are not talking about people who are born Jewish. Now, when I say converts, they don't have to themselves be converts. They could be descendants of converts. But the point is, they don't have land in Eretz Yisrael. That gives us a hint as to who these people are, which we'll get to in a minute. They're still talking. Vanishma bekol Yehonadav ben Rechav avinu. We listened to the voice of Yehonadav ben Rechav, our father. L'chol asher tzivanu, everything he commanded us. L'vilti shesos yayin kol yameinu, not to drink wine all of our days. Anachnu, nashenu, banenu, uvnosenu, us, our wives, our sons, our daughters. U'levilti benos batim l'shivtenu, and not to build houses for us to dwell in. V'cherem v'sadeh v'zera lo yielanu, and vineyards and fields and crops would not be for us. V'neshev ba'alim, we dwelled. Now here you have the word neshev, that means to live. We lived in tents. V'nishma v'nas k'chol asher tzivanu Yonadav avinu, we listened and we did like everything that Yonadav, our father, said. Please note those words. Vanishma vanaas. What does that remind you of? Naase vanishma. Okay, they use the same phrase that we use when we got the Torah. Naase vanishma. We will do and we will hear. They reversed it over here. Vanishma vanaas. We will hear and we will do like everything Yonadav, our father, said. But they reverse it. They don't say we will do and we will hear. But rather, we heard and we did. Yud Aleph 11. Vayihi ba'alos Nebuchadrezzar melech Bavel el ha'aretz. But it was when Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Bavel, came up on the land. We mentioned that Nebuchadrezzar comes to power in the fourth year of Yehoyakim. So here, we're already in the time of Nebuchadrezzar's reign. And when he came into power, so now they want to explain why they are in Yerushalayim. If they've been living as nomads and in tents and not in cities, etc., what are they doing in Yerushalayim now? Because when Nebuchadnezzar came to power, Vanomer, we said, Bo'u v'navo Yerushalayim, let us come to Yerushalayim, mipnei chel ha-kastim, because of the army of the kastim. If you'll recall, the kastim are the people of Bavel. Umipnei chel aram, because of the army of Aram, who were with the Babylonians. Vaneshev Yerushalayim, so we dwelled in Yerushalayim. But it's not because we wanted to, we had no choice, because we had to run for our lives from the armies that were now ravaging the countryside. We needed to come into the fortified city to Yerushalayim, which has a wall around it. So we do not want to drink wine. Yirmiyahu now doesn't know what he's supposed to do. What do you do now? Hashem told him to tell them to drink wine. They didn't do it. So now what? But Hashem immediately appears to Yirmiyahu with the answer to what should be done and why he gave him these instructions. Vayihi divar Hashem al Yirmiyo lemor, the word of Hashem came to Yirmiyo saying, Ko amar Hashem Tzvakos Elokei Yisrael. So says Hashem Tzvakos, the God of Yisrael. Holoch ve'amart only ish Yehuda uliyosh ve'Yerushalayim. Go and tell the people of Yehuda and those who dwell in Yerushalayim. Halo sikhu musar. You should take musar. You should take criticism. Lishmoel devarai, to listen to my words. Ne'um Hashem says Hashem. You should take criticism from here. Who kam es divrei Yehonadav ben Rechav. The words of Yehonadav ben Rechav have been established, meaning they've been kept. Asher tziva esbanav, that he commanded his descendants. Levilti shesos yayin, that they should not drink wine. V'lo shasu, they didn't drink arayom azeh till this day. Ki shamu es mitzvah saviyam, they listened to the commandment of their father. V'anochi dibarti aleichem hashkem v'daber, I spoke to you early and on. V'lo shematem elo, you did not listen to me. V'ashlach aleichem es kol avadai ha-neviyim, and I sent to you all of my servants, the Neviyim, the prophets. Hashkem v'shaloach, early, and to continue sending them. Lamar saying, Shuvu na ish midar gohara, return now each man from his evil ways. V'itivu mal aleichem, and make your actions better. V'al telchu acharei Elohim acherim le'avdam, don't go after other gods to serve them. U'shivu el ha'adam asher asati lechem el avoseichem, you should dwell on the land that I've given to you and to your ancestors. By doing teshuva, you'll be able to stay on the land. V'lo hitisem es aznechem, you did not turn your ear. V'lo shematem elah, you didn't listen to me. But you should take musar. Ki hekimu b'nei Yehonadav ben Rechav es mitzvah saviyem asher tzivam. Because the children of Yehonadav ben Rechav, they established the commandment of their father that he commanded them. But this nation did not listen to me, says Hashem. Therefore, so says Hashem, the God of hosts, the God of Israel. Behold, I'm bringing upon Yehuda and all the dwellers who dwell in Yerushalayim, Eis kol hara'a shadibarti aleim, all the evil that I spoke about them. Yan dibarti aleim v'lo shameu, because I spoke to them and they did not listen. V'ekra lahem, I call out to them v'lo anu, they did not answer. However, ulaveis ha-rechavim, but for the household of rechavim, amar Yirmiyo, says Yirmiyo, ko amar Hashem tzvakos elokei Yisrael, so says Hashem tzvakos, the God of Yisrael. Because you listened to the commandment of Yehonadav of your ancestor, vatishmeru es kol mitzvosav, and you kept all of his commandments, vatasu kechol asher tzivo aschem, you did everything he commanded to you. Lachin, therefore, ko amar Hashem tzvakos elokei Yisrael, so says Hashem, the God of Yisrael, lo yikareis ish liyonadav ben rechav, they will not be cut off a man from the household of Yehonadav ben Rechav, omed lafanai, standing before me kol hayamim, all the days. That forever, the descendants of Yehonadav ben Rechav will survive, and there will always be at least one from that household serving me at all times. And they will never be cut off because they listened to the commandment of their father. A fascinating story in which Hashem is using the loyalty of a family to what their ancestor told them to do as a comparison to the Jews who would not listen to the Nevi'im, to the prophets. Who is the family of Yehonadav ben Rechav? Harechavim. Who is this family of Rechavim? So the Gemara tells us, based on the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim and other places as well, that the family of Yehonadav ben Rechav are descendants of Yisro. Yisro, who was a ger, was a convert, and his descendants, besides Tzipora, who married Moshe Rabbeinu, but other descendants of Yisro, they became gerim, they became converts, and came to Eretz Yisrael. They did not get land because they were converts, and forever after, their descendants do not have land. And this family, it's not all the descendants of Yisro, it's one line from the descendants of Yisro, is this family of Rechavim. Why did Yonadav ben Rechav tell his descendants not to drink wine, not to live in houses, not to have fields and vineyards, etc.? Because Yonadav ben Rechav said as follows, once we heard the prophecies of Yirmiyahu saying that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, then we are no longer going to behave as if everything is wonderful. We are not going to behave as if everything is perfect and beautiful. We are going to behave in a manner that reflects the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, even though the Beis HaMikdash was still standing. We're going to live now. You, my children, and my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren, my family, we are going to live in a way that reflects the prophecy of Yirmiyahu. We are going to live in a way that shows that we are paying attention to his prophecy, where the people are rejecting the prophecies right and left, and they're not willing to listen to what is happening. Nobody wants to hear the evil of the prophecies. We are not going to do that. We are going to behave in a way that shows that this is real, that the Beis HaMikdash is on its way to destruction. And we're going to live like that now. And his words were so powerful, and his family was so loyal to what he said. They were loyal to what he said, which was in keeping with the prophecies of Yirmiyahu, that even when Yirmiyahu invited them personally to the Beis HaMikdash and gave them wine, they said, we will not drink it. They refused to drink the wine. Now this is why it's critical to note that Yirmiyahu did not say, Hashem said to drink the wine. Because had Yirmiyahu said, Hashem said to drink the wine, how could they not drink the wine? You can't go against the word of Hashem, no matter what. Even if there's a family minhag, you can't go against the word of Hashem. But Yirmiyahu didn't say that. He said, drink wine. So they said, no, we will not drink wine because our family does not drink wine. We behave now as in a manner that reflects the destruction which hasn't yet happened. Do we have an example of this idea of behaving as if there's a destruction in advance of the destruction? And what's the point of that? Why? If there's going to be a destruction, fine. So that's a terrible thing. We don't need to mourn in advance. If Chas V'Shalom it happens, then mourn then. Why is it that they mourn in advance? No wine, no living in city, no living in houses, no crops, no vineyards. What, you have to be sad in advance? You have to behave that way in advance? Gemara tells us in Maseches Gittin, in the Gemaras that discuss the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, Adaf Nun Vav Amud Beis on 56b, that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai famously was smuggled out of Yerushalayim. He managed to get himself out of Yerushalayim during the Roman siege of Yerushalayim, and he managed to get an audience with Aspasianus, with Vespasian himself. And he talked to him a little bit, and he impressed him, and Aspasianus gave Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai the opportunity to have a few concessions that the Romans would agree to when they were conquering Eretz Yisrael and destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for three things. He asked for, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, give me Yavne, the city of Yavne, and its wise men. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai knew that with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews would never be able to survive without the Talmidei Chachamim, without the scholarship of the Torah. And the scholars lived in Yavne, and therefore he asked that the city of Yavne be spared. And Aspasianus agreed, and Yavda was spared. And because of that, we had our Talmidei Chachamim, even though we were in a state of destruction. He also asked for Shushilta de Rabban Gamliel, the line, the lineage of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, who came from Hillel, who came from David HaMelech, who was the leadership of the Jewish people. He asked that that line be spared, that Rabban Gamliel and his descendants not be killed. Rabban Gamliel's father was killed, was martyred. That's Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the first one of the Asara Harugei Malchus, the first of the 10 martyrs that we read about on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur. He was the first one murdered by the Romans. So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai asked that that systematic destruction of the leaders of the Jewish people be stopped. The Romans typically killed out the leadership because that would force the people to now have to follow Roman leadership. So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai asked that the line of Rabban Gamliel be spared. And again, that request was granted. So these two requests, they resonate with us. Save the Talmidei Chachamim. Save the leadership of Rabban Gamliel. Makes a lot of sense. What's the third thing he asked for? The Asvasa Demasyon Lei L'Rabbi Tzadok. And a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. That's the third thing that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for. A doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Not a doctor to heal all of the sick people who are dying because of the siege, but rather a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. What is that all about? So the Gemara itself asks the question. The Gemara says, Asvasa demasik leila Rabbi Tzadok, a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok, mayhi. What did the doctor do? And the Gemara explains how the doctor healed Rabbi Tzadok. Why Rabbi Tzadok? So the Gemara says, because Rabbi Tzadok had fasted for 40 years. Rabbi Tzadok had fasted for 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, in order that the Beis HaMikdash not be destroyed. Rabbi Tzadok was obviously a great tzaddik, and he was afraid that the destruction was going to happen, and therefore he fasted. Obviously he ate at night. Can't fast without me not eat at all. But he ate very, very little for 40 years in order to prevent the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Let me read that to you in the Gemara. Rabbi Tzadok Yosef Arbain Shnin B'Ta'anisa. Rabbi Tzadok sat 40 years in fasting, so that the Beis HaMikdash should not be destroyed. And he asked for a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok, 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, before the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there were already signs that it would be destroyed. By then, we no longer had any prophets, so we didn't have someone like Yirmiyahu saying that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, but there were already signs that it would be destroyed. The gates of the Beis HaMikdash would open up by themselves. They were supposed to be closed and locked, and they would open by themselves. Things like that. There were bad signs that were happening with 40 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Tzadok, knowing that we were headed in a very, very bad way, he fasted. And he fasted for 40 years. In the end, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for a doctor to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Why? Why does he want to heal Rabbi Tzadok? I mean, we want to heal everybody. Anybody who's sick should be healed. But Rabbi Tzadok in particular should be healed, because Rabbi Tzadok had already behaved like the Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed. No one wanted to hear about it. just like in the first Beis HaMikdash, no one wanted to hear about it. We don't want to hear bad things either. No one wants to hear there's going to be bad. No one wants to accept that. No one wants to hear that. And it's very, very difficult. People live in denial all the time and no one wants to hear about bad things. But sometimes the bad things are imminent. In the days when there was prophecy, there was Nevuah, then you knew about it because the Navi said so. In the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Tzadok knew about it. They knew about it also because there were signs that it was going to happen. And Rabbi Tzadok therefore fasted. And he behaved as if there already was a destruction and now he was in mourning for the destruction. And he fasted. But he fasted so that it would not be destroyed. Because by behaving in a way that reflected its destruction, there was hope that people would notice, people would alter their own behaviors, and then maybe it wouldn't be destroyed. The family of Yonadav ben Rechav also behaved in a manner that reflected the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, in the hope that their behavior would be noticed, and others would say, this destruction is a real thing. This is serious. And then perhaps everybody would change their ways and the Beis HaMikdash would not be destroyed. We have that example with Rabbi Tzadok in the second Beis HaMikdash and with Yonadav ben Rechav's family in the first Beis HaMikdash. I want to just give you a little bit more background about the children of Yisro. They came to Eretz Yisrael. They did not have any land, and they were given the area around Yericho. Yericho was totally destroyed, and that area was not given to any of the tribes, and that land was given to them to at least be on, to live on, as long as it was available. Eventually, that land needed to be used, and they needed to leave that land. The Pasuk tells us, where did they go when they left? So the Pasuk tells us in, it's mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, and it's mentioned also, it's alluded to in Shoftim, that they went to Yavetz. Who is Yavetz? Yavetz is a person. Who is Yavetz? Yavetz was the Shofet, was the judge, Asniel ben Kenaz. Asniel ben Kenaz was one of the greatest of the Shoftim, one of the greatest of the judges. He was towards the very beginning of the era of the Shoftim. And he was a huge Talmud Chacham who was able to, just to show you how great of a Talmud Chacham he was, how great of a scholar he was able to restore the details of Torah that had been forgotten during the mourning period for Moshe Rabbeinu. During that time, the Jews forgot elements of the Torah, not big parts, but many details were forgotten, and he was able to figure them out from his own pilpul, from his own delving into the Torah. He was able to reestablish that which had been forgotten. The Gemara tells us, based on the Psukim, that Asniel ben Kenaz wanted students to learn, to teach. He didn't have a large yeshiva with a lot of students. He wanted students to teach. The Gemara tells us that Yisro's descendants wanted to be taught. And Hashem made a shidduch. And he brought together Asniel ben Kenaz, Yavetz, and the descendants of Yisro, the Rebbe, and the students, and they were taught there. The family of Rechavim that we are discussing here is a branch from that family, of the descendants of Yonadav and Rechav. And they are the ones who lived in a way that reflected the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash prior to it happening. I'll just reference one pasuk, one verse in Divrei Hayamim, for those of you who would like to see it, you can look in Divrei Hayamim in Perek Well, first of all, Divrei Hayamim Aleph. Divrei Hayamim is broken up into two sections. That's not, that breaking up is arbitrary. As far as we're concerned, there's only one Divrei Hayamim, but it's broken up into two sections. In the second parak, in the second chapter, in Pasuk Nun Hei, chapter 55, it talks about those who were the students of Yavetz, and it calls them Tirasim Shimasim Suchasim. Tirasim comes from the word Terua, to blow a shofar. They called out, they davened for Torah. Shimasim comes from the word Shomea. They listened to Torah, and suchasim comes from the word sukkah. They lived in huts. They refused to live in houses. They refused to live. They refused their vineyards and fields, etc. And they lived as in a way that reflected the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash prior to it happening. So Hashem here gives Musar. He gives, he criticizes, gives admonishment to the Jewish people. Look at the house of the Rechavim, how they listened to their father, and you should be listening as well. But Hashem concludes that because they listened, because they were loyal, and they were loyal in a way that reflected the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash before it happened, therefore they will survive. They will endure. There will always be someone from the house of Rechav that will endure and will survive. Through it all. Through everything. Through all the trials and tribulations of the Galus which ensues, they will survive. We have to assume that among us somewhere are still descendants of the house of Yonadav ben Rechav. With all of what has gone on the past several thousand years, still they endure because they were loyal and because they behaved in a manner that showed that they believed in what Yirmiyahu was saying, rather than pretend like it's not happening, rather than stick their heads in the sand and pretend like it's not happening. They took it to heart and they attempted to stop it by behaving this way. Next time we will continue with the next parak, with parak Lamed Vav, chapter 36.